Hello and welcome to the Dinner Agenda. This is Bo.
And this is CeeLo.
Hello, CeeLo. How are you?
How's it going?
Good. It's going good.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm so good. I'm going to have to invite you guys over to play some cards soon.
Why?
I have a brand new card table, like a green felt poker playing card table.
Why?
It's in a box. It's huge. It's sitting in my kitchen.
Why?
Why?
Yeah. What made you buy this?
Thanks for asking. Why? Let me tell you more about that.
Oh, no. What happened? Tell me.
So my stepmom and my sister-in-law have been longtime auction people. They like going to auction. They're collectors. And they're often talking about their experiences there. And when I saw them recently, they were talking about this online auction place and singing the praises of it. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. I don't need to buy any more things, you know? So I think like that same night before I got into bed, I'm like, you know, maybe I'll just check it out. It's online. I'm on my phone. Easy peasy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I go online and then I'm looking and I'm like, oh, look at this New Balance shoes for $10. Like, that's a great deal. It wasn't my size though, so it kind of sucked. But, and then I saw a couple of other things. I'm like, oh, there's some pretty good stuff on here.
Mm-hmm.
And I made the stupid mistake of showing wifey the next day. And so,
oh my God.
So now we have an online auction account and it combines competition and gambling and shopping online all in one for her. And so that's now how I have a green felt poker card table sitting in my kitchen.
Okay.
I also have a commercial deep fryer.
What?
I have an ice maker.
What?
I have
what? Okay, this is your fucking fault. You know that, right? It's your fault.
I know I shouldn't have done it. Well, the ice maker I really wanted because it'll be great for up north. But other than that, yeah.
Okay, enjoy spending $500 in oil just to deep fry some chicken wings.
I know. Well, we'll have to have like a big fish fry or something like that.
Yeah, you do that.
And play cards.
And play and cards. Make ice. And make ice in our drinks. That's lovely.
Well, there are some good deals to be found. I agree. But sometimes I'm just rolling my eyes at the boxes and questioning why on earth did I ever share.
So I know that you have internet controls on for your kids.
Everything.
Yeah. Yes. You may need to apply that to your wife and not tell her that way. I don't know. The website's down. I don't know why you can't bid.
They must have gone out of business. I don't know. I'm sorry.
Well, like, that's just how it is. I have to tell you. So, like, I know I'm sitting here saying, like, you're fucking stupid because you should have known better. But, you know, I just did something really stupid, too. I went to the home show.
Well, that doesn't sound stupid.
No,
that sounds like fun.
No, yeah. So I went to the home show. I don't know what the fuck my problem was, but I go there. I came home with a straightening iron for my hair, which I already have a million of. But this one uses steam and this one damages your hair less. And this one's really easy to. And so.
How much was it?
Oh, that was $150. And then I came. Oh, no, it goes downhill from there. And then I bought some new frying pans because Dave was like, I really hate these frying pans that we have. If you ever find some really good quality frying pans. So I bought some new frying pans. And then the best part was I bought a new mattress. Like, what the fuck?
What do you need a new mattress for?
I don't know because.
Why did you buy it at the home show instead of doing like. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
I would think like Sleep Country has a deal on that would be the time to go get a mattress.
So let me tell you. So it was at the Sleep Country, the Sleep Country booth.
The Sleep Country.
It was the Sleep Country booth.
I've been there before.
they buy back your old mattresses. So we had the mattress that we have right now, I think is 10 years old, and they said that they would buy it back. And so they bought it back and I was able to apply that to a brand new Tempur-Pedic mattress. Oh my God. I know. So, I mean, I'm condemning you for the online auction and then look at what I freaking did. But you know what? I'm allowed to be
joking. Practice what to preach, girl.
Yeah. I'd like to take it back, but I'm not going to because it made me feel good to say that you were a fucking idiot. So,
I was going to say, for what it's worth, I do believe a brand new frying pan did come in from the online auction. And I have about 80 frying pans, I think, in my house. Anything like kitchen stuff, because Chefy Chef Wife is always on top of that stuff.
Yeah. Kind of- yeah. Well, anything that Mel will use to cook with, I'm down for. So, yeah.
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 And I'm told I'm not allowed to complain about those purchases because she's the chef. So she gets to pick and do those things.
Well, note to self, put the credit card in the freezer. Stop spending.
Yeah, no kidding. Damn those little easy ways of just saying, oh, click on Visa and it fills in all the shit for you.
And then you just get so taken in, right? Like like the excitement of it all and the, oh, it was such a great deal, you know? Oh,
yeah.
It's okay. I better have some really good sleep with this bloody Tempur-Pedic mattress thing.
Yeah, no kidding. I'll need a full report on that for sure.
Well, next time you're over, come and jump on it and see what you think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what's on the agenda?
Okay, so I'll give you a little bit of a backstory.
Sure.
Before I say what it is. But okay. I have a friend of mine who's been married for a number of years and is constantly, their relationship is in turmoil. It feels like all the time. Like it feels like there's always something kind of going on. And I thought to myself, why on earth does she stay? I don't understand it. There's no kids. There's no kids involved. And so I think like a lot of times people consider that before they leave a relationship and that adds a different layer sometimes. So that I feel like I can relate to, but on your own, she's young, you know, and I just don't understand it. So I started, you know, looking up a couple of things and I found this information on trauma bond. Or trauma bonding.
Okay.
And I started to read through some of the, you know, you get down one of those Google rat holes, right?
Yes, yes.
And so I'm just reading a little bit about it. And so that's what I thought would be a good agenda topic for today.
That's interesting. That's a very interesting one. Okay.
Yeah.
So trauma bonding, do you have information on trauma bonding?
I have a little bit, but I think I'll tell you a little bit more about, you know, their story.
Okay.
And not really their story, more so how I felt, right? So I felt like I was being judgmental. I felt like I didn't understand why they were staying.
So what made you feel like you were, like, what were you saying to her?
Well, I feel like it's easy for me to say, why don't you pick up and leave? It's easy for me to say, okay, it should be an easy thing to do.
Okay.
Right. And so I think that's what inspired me to kind of look up a little bit more information was the fact that it must not be easy or else she wouldn't have done it. Right. She would have done it before.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. Okay. So what I found out was, the trauma bond is basically like a connection between an abusive person and the individual they abuse. That's what's kind of meant by that term, trauma bond.
Okay.
And it's an attachment created by repeating physical or emotional, in this case, it was emotional trauma, with some kind of positive like reinforcement.
Mm-hmm.
And so it gets the person impacted by it into a really tough spot because they're unable to break away from it.
Yeah. So, you know what? This has me thinking, actually. I know that when I was in my early 20s, I was in a not so great relationship with somebody. And I know that you're aware of that person because, you know, you've been my friend forever, right? Yeah. And I know it's funny because it's making me remember back then as well. I think that you and I had also had similar conversations back then where you were like, you need to just leave. And I couldn't. And you were like, but you need to just, like, you know, it was very like, you got to go, you need to leave. And you know what? I remember I kind of stopped talking to you about it a little bit because not that it was your fault, like, you know, but it was the, I was so confused because I couldn't leave. And then I was feeling very stupid about that. You know what I mean? And embarrassed and humiliated that I was allowing this to happen. Well, and I just kind of shut down, you know?
And that makes sense to me. That totally makes sense to me. And I think, too, that's why people are kind of reluctant to talk about it.
Yeah.
Because of that feeling of being embarrassed, of not being strong enough or not being
maybe
something enough to be able to get out of the relationship. But when you read a little bit about it, it's, you know, the abuser in this relationship. And again, not necessarily physical. I'm talking emotional.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially really grooms their person, their interest.
Yeah.
And so it's through that whole process that all of a sudden, you're not all of a sudden, like through that process and during over that period of time, it becomes so difficult.
Mm-hmm.
You're so enmeshed with this person.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts off positive.
Yeah.
It starts off with what they call love bombing. Right.
Yep.
And that's at the very beginning, and you're appreciated and you're loved, and you get nice prezzies, and, you know, and it feels good, and it maybe even feels too good to be true.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of that first step.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's funny that you talk about the love bombing. You know, that happened with me for sure. You know, in the beginning, he was just like, you know, you're so pretty, you're so beautiful. I just, you know, I can't believe that you're with me. You know, I've always wanted somebody like you. I've never been able to find them. You know, I'm such a, you know, he would go on about like, you know, I'm not worthy of you. I can't believe somebody like you is even interested. And it was just such a, like, I started to feel, I don't know. I want to kind of say like, you know how you want to like, you feel bad for somebody, you want to fix them or you want to show them love and compassion because they've been hurt and you know what I mean? Like that kind of stuff. So you start kind of getting, I started getting into kind of that a little bit, those feelings a little bit. And he was also like, he knew a lot of well-to-do people as well. And so, you know, he was kind of wining and dining me a lot as well. And it just felt, honestly, it felt so great.
And, it's like wonderstruck or something where you're just like, what is happening to me right now?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, yeah, that part, if that's where it ended, then that would be awesome, right?
Yeah.
Then it would just be an awesome relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
So the next step, though, is building on that trust they've created by showering you with the love and affection.
Yeah.
And then that trust becomes almost like a form of dependency.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that over a period of time, you start to depend on them. It could be for love. It could be for that validation. Like sometimes I think, you know, in your case, you had not experienced a relationship. That was probably one of your first serious relationships like that before. And so it's almost like, oh, this is so awesome. And you know what I mean? It's like pulling the wool over a little bit. And, you know, they can essentially make you feel like you have such a strong love and connection with them.
Yeah.
And that to me sounds so much like sometimes like young love.
Yes.
And
yeah.
And that there's, you know, nothing you would you wouldn't do for them. You become pretty solely dependent on them.
Yeah. That actually makes a lot of sense. You know, I guess making you feel like that relationship is just like so special, but you know, also it makes
what would you do without me?
Well,
that's part that I like, that's like where the work from the abuser starts to come in, right?
Yeah.
And that's when our grooming is happening.
Yeah. And I was going to say the dependency part really kind of hit me there because it's like, I remember, you know, we started dating and I had a very good, like social life prior to meeting him, you know, like, you know, I was in college at the time. And, you know, I had friends and we were out on weekends and, you know, that kind of stuff. And it does seem like when I started dating him almost, I want to say overnight, but it probably wasn't overnight, but it felt like him and I became inseparable almost. It was like we did absolutely everything together. And then, you know, he'd never wanted to do it with my friends. So like when we would go out to places, if we were going to go out dancing, if we were going to go out, you know, wherever, it was always, no, I want to just do it, you and I. I don't want to join your friends. I don't want to, you know. And so he never really came around a lot. If you remember, CeeLo, he was never really around us a lot. When I was out with you guys, I was out with myself, like by myself with
solo.
You. Yeah. Right?
If you were allowed to go out solo.
I remember that too.
Right? Yeah, like that's that, that control part of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You remember when we went to Niagara Falls?
No. What? We went to Niagara Falls.
You and him and me and my one and only boyfriend went to Niagara Falls. I have picture evidence. Oh, I have picture evidence.
Okay. So I remember us going camping. I'm vaguely remembering Niagara Falls. I don't know why. But so we went together. Okay. All right. And
yeah, we together. No, I was just saying. I remember that because you were like,
we didn't hang out. I didn't remember. I was like, what the shit?
There's like some big long story. No, it was just that we went. No, because you had said that you don't recall you guys doing a lot together. No. It was either you and him.
Always.
Or you were on your own doing something. And so the one time I do remember was definitely.
Yeah.
Niagara Falls.
Yeah. So that. Okay. So, and I remember us camping. I remember the four of us going to some cottage. Like, let's be real. It wasn't camping because I don't camp. But it was like, you know, it was like a cottage, right? And I remember that. But I think those are the only two times I remember. And I don't ever remember because you and I used to go out dancing a lot. We used to, you know, I don't ever remember him coming out with us together with that. It was always just him and I. Him and I. But okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. So now, like, over time, you've got the love bombing and then you've got this, like, trust dependency phase. So still everything is good. But then it starts with criticism. And it starts very subtly. And it's just comments about maybe your friends and how they are. And maybe they're not that great for you. Maybe it's your family that he's trying to.
Oh, my God.
You know, pull you away from. Yeah. And it starts maybe with a little bit of negative things about you specifically. Mm-hmm. Like that shirt you're wearing is not that complimentary. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd look better in these, you know, so it starts off very subtly, but it starts to, if you were someone with, you know, not great self-esteem, right? And then you're taking up this love mountain and then you're slowly starting to be chipped back down to where you should be in this controlled, almost like environment.
Yeah. It's funny that you say that because I, you know, but the criticism, so. I do remember that happening, with me. So I remember it did start off exactly as you kind of described it, where it was, you know, why are you always wearing jeans? Why can't you wear a dress? You know, it started off with that kind of stuff. And then you were like, oh, okay, well, maybe I do wear jeans too often. Maybe I will wear a dress, you know, that kind of stuff. And it just continually progressed. And from those simple things, it progressed to comments about my weight, right? Like, fuck's sake, it's always about the fucking weight in this story. Well, you know what I mean?
Like, it's like the abuser in this scenario or in these scenarios, they're smart.
Oh, yeah, they
are.
They
know exactly what it is to, you know, enough to kind of pick on.
Yeah.
You know, to get to you for sure.
You know,
for sure.
It's funny because I remember you getting your dog. Remember Sydney?
Yeah, Sydney Regis.
Yeah. And so, gosh, we were in our 20s, I think, right? I think we were in our 20s. And you got this dog. And I remember you calling and saying, I just got a puppy. And I was like, oh my gosh, you've got to come over and show me this puppy. And you brought the puppy and my ex was there with us. And I was just so overjoyed about seeing this puppy and you were so excited and we were so happy and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And you had left. And, you know, I remember him saying, you know, I know you keep saying she's your best friend, but I can't see it. I don't understand why you think she's your best friend. I don't see that she cares about you. I mean, does she come around enough? You know, does she, you know, and he was just really kind of trying to get into my head that you were just not that great of a friend to me. And it's funny because you're saying this and I'm thinking about what you've just said about the criticism, about the dependency, you know, all that stuff and the isolation, you know, like you mentioned about, you know, being allowed to go out. And that's right. I remember I used to get such a hassle if I did want to go out without him.
Yeah.
With my girlfriends. It was like, just, it was always an argument. It was always an argument. Yeah.
Well, I think the tipping point almost is in that you start to really believe that something is wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
And that, oh shit, I'm not doing these things right. I'm not wearing the skirt. I'm not whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't have the right friends. It's all on me. I've done all these things wrong. I am so not worthy of this relationship. This person who was, you know, weeks ago or months ago, whatever, showering me with this love. I need to change. I need to behave differently in order to be worthy, still be worthy of that relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's interesting because, you know, it was around this time. So I know in the PTSD episode, we talked about me seeking out therapy for the rape, right?
Mm-hmm.
The rape was by him. And well, I know you know that. And it was actually around this time that it actually occurred. That it was around this time. And, you know, that is what I think sealed the deal for me because I... See,
what do you mean sealed the deal?
Well, okay, so let me explain. So that's what I mean by that is, you know, you and I culturally, we've grown up very differently, right? So I'm Italian. My parents were more old-fashioned. I mean, my dad more so than my mom, but you know, there was a lot of old-fashioned values. You know, I was raised Catholic, so there was that element to it as well. And it's like, you know, if you lose your virginity, but to somebody that you're not marrying, right? Then, you know, you're used goods. It's done. It's a done deal. And so I was, when this all started with him, I had just turned 19. I had just turned 19. And so it was within that year that rape happened. And so I was young and I thought, and that was my first. Like, I mean, I had had boyfriends before, but really they were stupid high school boyfriends. You kissed and he felt your boobs and that was as far as it went, right? For me anyways, right?
Little dry hump.
Yeah, or that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that was as far as it. I mean, I had never even seen a guy's thing before until...
Sausage.
Yeah, you know what I mean? The sausage until my ex. And so I felt like... I was done in for. I thought that was it. I'm going to have to stay with this person for the rest of my life now because I'm never going to, like, no man is ever going to want me. I truly, truly believed because of how I had been taught about it, right? Like sex and stuff. That was the case. In addition, I mean, he also at that same time, kind of blamed me. Like, you know, it happened. I was very clear that I did not want this, like very, very, very clear. And he did it anyways, right? And I remember like just sobbing. And he kept saying, "You're ruining it all. You're ruining it all. Why are you making this, you know, such a sad situation? This should be a loving situation." And, he really made me feel like I was being a stupid little girl for being so upset by this, you know, and that really fucked me over. That those two things, the cultural thing of, you know, you've got to be a virgin for your husband. And then the, you know,
like being born. Now you're basically have to marry him.
Exactly. That's what I thought. Honestly, well, I stayed with him for years. I was in my 20s when I broke up with him. So obviously I did, you know, there was something going on there. Right. So
how long did you stay with him?
6 years.
Good God.
I know.
The whole gaslighting phase, right? That is when someone makes you doubt your own perception.
Yeah.
And they manipulate you into believing what they want you to believe.
Yeah. And I guess that's what right? he was doing. Yeah.
And that's exactly what he was doing. There's no question on it. When things go wrong, they're going to blame you. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's also funny when you talk about that gaslighting, about the doubting your own perception and, you know, manipulating you into believing their narrative and stuff. You know, he would, you know, if there was a place I wasn't comfortable with him going, like, let's say a strip bar with his friends that were known to be not so great. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I had issues with that. You know, he would, I came to realize after, he was always picking a fight with me just before he was ready to go to this event that he knew I would not be happy about. So that way we'd be in an argument. I wasn't speaking to him for a day or so. And then he'd say, well, you weren't speaking to me and, you know, you got mad and whatever. And I had to get out and, you know, they just happened to be going there. It was kind of like, that was his excuse, you know? And I think that was a complete manipulation as well.
Oh, 100%.
Did you know though? I don't know if you knew.
Calculating. Hey?
Oh, like, honestly, when I think about it now, knowing a little bit more of what I know and hearing what you're talking about now, when you're reading these things, it's like, yeah, you can clearly see it, but at the time when you're in it, you don't see it. Right? Like, you really don't see it because you're just so enmeshed with it. And they are so manipulative and so good at what they do. If they weren't good at what they do, like at this, you know, I think there would be less yeah. people out there that would, you know what I mean, have these stories. But I don't know if you knew this, but there, that term gaslighting, it was actually from a movie. I think it was like back in the 40s.
Seriously? I had no idea.
Yeah, yeah. It's the movie's actually called Gaslight. And I think Ingrid Bergman's in it. I think there was a supporting role from Angela Lansbury in it. I had seen it a long time ago. And it basically, it's, and I guess this is why they got the term from it, but basically it's like this guy, this man, he meets this sheltered woman, AKA Bo. No, I'm kidding. So like, you know what I mean? He meets this yeah. sheltered woman and, you know, he's after her because she has some wealth. And so he, you know, love bombs her, makes her fall in love with him, makes him completely dependent on him, does everything, you know, with her. And then what he tries to do is make her feel crazy so that way he can dominate her and get what he wants, like get her to sign over things. And so how he does that is, back in the 40s, you know, your lighting system was on a gas line. So you would turn your lights on by turning on the gas and then lighting the lamp, right? And
it all makes perfect friggin' sense. I've right? always wondered where that term had come
yeah,
from.
Yeah, yeah. And so what he would actually do is he would go into the attic and he would lower the gas so that the lights would start to flicker or they would go off. And when he would come into the room, she'd be like, I think something's wrong because the lights were flickering. He's like, what are you talking about? They're not flickering. This is, you know, you're losing your mind. Anyways, and it was this whole big story about how he was literally making her seem crazy because he was doing these things, or like he'd give her a gift and then she'd have it and she'd put it into her bag, you know, or put it into her jewelry box, and then it would go missing and he'd get so upset at her for losing this beautiful thing that he bought her, and he was so upset and she'd feel so bad. Meanwhile, he had taken it and hidden it on her, and then he would make it show up in some weird place, like the fridge or something, and then he'd say, like, something is wrong with you. Like, yeah, you're really losing your mind, you know? So it was, that is where gaslighting came from. It came from that movie. It was a really interesting, for the 40s, that was a very interesting thing to kind of, you know, show.
But, well, I'm going to have to look it up and watch it. Yeah. I had no idea that's where the term had come from, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
So I'll definitely have to watch it. It's just scary to me that, I don't know, that something like that can happen in a relationship and you just have to be like, how do you avoid it?
Well, you know, it's funny. And I mean, because we started off talking about how you have a friend that kind of goes through this, you kind of question, like, why are you still there? I mentioned about how when we were young, it was kind of like a confusion as to why are you still with this person? And I think now as we're getting older, CeeLo, it's like, you can see that there's just so many moving parts to these kinds of things. It's like, there's so many things that play into it. It's, I know this is going to sound really weird, but you know how they say that pedophiles groom their victims. And it's like they know which kids to pick because they know which ones are either coming from, you know, homes where they're not watched as much or, you know, I'm not saying that that's always the case, right? Like, because it happens to people who are very diligent, like parents who are very diligent with their children. But on you know, from what I've read, the norm is that they know who to pick. They know where to go. They can see the types of kids that might be a little bit easier to manipulate, and then they give it a shot. And if they're right, then they go for it, right? They go for that kid and they begin their grooming process. To me, it feels the same. I think that these people also do the same type of grooming, but in a different way, right? Like it's the same type of process where they see that they have met a possible or potential victim, then they test the waters, and if they're getting the right results, they go all in. It's like and it's a grooming process. It really changes how you feel about yourself.
Oh, 100%. It feels almost like textbook when you go through the steps, and then maybe you look back on a relationship as you've been doing, thinking, no, oh, that's exactly what it is. But I do, like, how do people learn how to be these people, right? Is it just for that sense of control over someone else and only ever getting exactly what they want out of it? I don't understand that part of it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think generationally, I think like what I've learned, I think most abuse is generational, meaning they've learned it from somewhere, right? Like it's passed down. I'm not saying that about pedophilia because I'm not quite sure. I think that might actually be something wrong with your brain. I don't know, but I really don't know enough about it. But I think a lot of times it is a generational thing. And it wouldn't surprise me if these abusers were really abused themselves. I mean, that, you know, where else would they get it from? Sure. I don't know.
Then the next part that I was reading about is about, you know, resigning to control and about feeling so beaten down and confused. And, you know, mixed up in your own mind, you question everything that you're thinking or that you're doing. And you question whether or not how you're being treated is it really that bad? Am I being dramatic? That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like when I've talked to my friend about this before, that was like exactly what she was saying. She'll say, this is a situation, this is what happens. And then instead of immediately challenging back, she's like, it's me. I've done something, or I'm being too dramatic, or I'm asking for too much. And I was like, oh my God, this is like textbook. My textbook conversation with her was just like this. And I'm just like,
yeah. So, you know,
she relinquishes all control, right?
Yeah.
She's the one in the wrong.
Yeah.
She's the one being too sensitive or too dramatic or too this, whatever.
And so
all control goes back to them.
It does. And also, I bet you if you talked to her about it, she would probably say something like, also, I was just so overwhelmed with all the arguments. I needed some peace. I was so sad all the time. I was just so upset all the time. I just give in now because I just can't, you know, I can't deal with it anymore. So it's kind of like you lose who you are and what you want so that you can just stop the craziness and the arguments and the everything. And you just kind of basically say, okay, that's it. You know, funny. Oh my gosh, I'm like so sentimental today. I don't know what the hell it is with the movie and then like all these memories and stuff. But there's a Billy Joel song called And So It Goes. And back when I was dating my ex, this song was, I guess, out. It was maybe popular. I don't know, whatever. But there was a line in the song that said, so I will share this room with you and you can have this heart to break. And I remember listening to that song and I remember feeling so sorrowful because I was like, that's how I feel with my ex. I'm just giving you my heart to break because I have no control over it. So you can do whatever you want with it. And it's so sad to feel like you've given yourself up like that.
You can do whatever you want with it and I'll just take it. I'll just suck it up.
Yeah.
You can on me and I'll apologize to you for being in the way.
Yeah, because like, you're so beaten up. I know, because you're so beaten down. You're so desperate to just stop feeling so shitty. And, you know, I think the problem with a lot of this is these people know what they're doing. So we're talking about a lot of the negative, CeeLo, but there's like a push-pull, right? There's this, they do these things. So if you think about the love bombing, for example, so they love bomb you because they're reeling you in. Then they criticize you and they're pushing you out. They're like demeaning you. They're breaking you down. Then they reel you back in again when they see that you're kind of, you know, getting away or questioning. Yeah. They reel you back in with the love and then they push you away and they make you depend on them. Then they bring you back in. And it's a constant cycle. And so you get really confused because the good times are so good, you know, they're really, really good. And so when the bad times are bad, it's like you do get confused.
Yes, I get that. I get that it's a cycle. It feels like a cycle when I talk to her about it, right? Like what she's going through, it feels, you know, they're either up or they're down. Things are good or they're bad. Mostly bad to, in my mind. But, you know, that's just like an outsider's perspective. I guess the question, I mean, I'm glad that I looked it up. I'm glad that we've been chatting about it. I feel a little bit more informed on, you know, how she got to this point and why it's so hard to recognize.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's hard to recognize it's time to leave, but it's even harder to then do something about it. So
yeah.
How did you end up splitting it off with him? I don't even remember.
You know, it's funny. Divine intervention, if you will, I suppose. So he had left for a job. It was kind of like an interim role that was going to provide him with a promotion. And this role was in Edmonton. You know, we had lived in Toronto at that time. And prior to him going, I think he was going to be gone for 6 months or something like that. So prior to him leaving, he had proposed, right? And at that time, I was like, oh, okay. You know, like, so bizarre. So he proposed. I felt like I had to say yes because I thought that that was what I had to do, right? And I remember.
That's your virginity.
Well, you know, and plus it's like, when you date someone for that long, I mean, isn't that what you're, you know, it's these old, stupid old fashioned values. I mean, I know better now, but, you know, at the time, that is what I was brought up thinking. And, you know, that's what my parents were brought up thinking too. I mean, you know, it's part of their generation. Right. So, I remember saying to my mom at one point, I don't know why, but I'm just not happy about this. Like, I just don't really want to say yes, you know, like I don't want to. And my mom made a comment. She's like, if you are feeling this way now, I don't think that you should. Right. Yeah. I want to know what really did it. What really, really did it for me. It was you, in a sense, because we were 23, 24, something like that.
Yeah.
And you had said to me, I'm going to move. I need a roommate. You know, I'm moving to a different apartment or whatever. I need a roommate. Or, you know, do you want to move in together? And I was like, oh my God, yeah. I'll move into the city with you. It was my first, you know, like getting out of the house. I was, you know, really excited. So you and I found an apartment together and we lived together. And I remember when I told him that I was going to move out of my parents' house and move in with you, he was not happy about that. He thought it was not the right thing to do. He actually called my parents and basically said, you know, she should not be allowed to be living on her own. You know, she's going to get up to no good. And, you know, da, 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 da. I mean, I'm only going to be gone for 6 months and then I'll be back. What is this going to do? And, you know, my father had a real issue with it because he was more old fashioned and he kind of sided with my ex. And he's like, yeah, I think you're right. My mom surprisingly was like, you know what? I think she should go. I think she should try it because my mom had left her home around the same age. I think she was 24 or 25. And she moved from Sudbury, Ontario to Toronto. So that was like very small town to big city. And she said it was the best thing that she had ever done. So she thought I should do it. And, you know, that is what helped me leave because once I got away from him, So he was away for 6 months, and now I was living on my own. And even when he came back into Toronto, I was still on my own and not as accessible because I was in the downtown city part, not the suburbs. And that separation away, that time away, made me definitely start to see things that I had never seen before. And that's what lent itself. I think I stayed another year with him.
I didn't think it was that long, but that time in my life was kind of blurry.
I remember. That's another episode.
I think, you know, I think it's good to that I've tried to educate myself, right? Because I want to be able to help this friend out, and I want to be able to understand where she's coming from. But I don't want to take the approach of what the fuck? Why don't you just leave? Why are you still with this guy? This makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
Because that's not very productive.
Yeah.
But having an understanding now of the process that this, that he's taken with her and where they're at. And it's textbook. I'm able to now sit down with her and have a conversation around what I've seen happening. Yeah. Right. And how I see her being treated. And I feel like a little boost of self-confidence, understanding and support will hopefully help her make some good decisions. So I think before too long, you know, after years of this, you're in it. You're almost addicted to that relationship. It becomes the norm, and you don't know any better. You don't know anything else. So,
well, and also you lose yourself, right? Like there's that part of you that truly does lose part of your identity. It is replaced by a narrative that this other person is putting onto it. You know what I mean? And it's so hard when you are in this, you know, I don't know if you remember a long time ago, we were talking about taking on the traits of who you date, right? Like how normal it is that, you know, when you spend a lot of time with somebody, sometimes you kind of absorb some of their traits, right? And I think that that's only natural because human beings want to connect with each other. We're you know, born to do that. And so, you know, especially when you're with somebody day in and day out, it's like you start to build some new norms or some new traditions or some new ways of looking at things or new behaviors or whatever. And I think it's kind of the same thing. It's us as humans being so social, such social creatures, such creatures that need for survival connection. It is easy to see how people can fall into that. And then you add into that someone who has compromised self-esteem or a con artist who is really, really, really good at what they're doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's a recipe for disaster. And, you know, it's hard, but I'm glad that you're looking at this from a place of compassion, because when you don't live it yourself.
Yeah.
When you haven't experienced it yourself, people don't get it. They don't understand. Like it's hard for them to truly empathize and put themselves in other people's shoes. So hopefully this kind of helps a little bit to see things from a different point of view. It's not that person is weak. It's that person is caught into something that they're having trouble breaking out of.
Over time.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And have now trouble seeing
outside
of seeing how to get out.
Yeah.
And I mean, that makes perfect sense to me. So I'm glad I'm going to set up a coffee chat with her and share with her a little bit of what I've learned and hopefully be that ear and that someone she can talk to.
I think that's awesome, CeeLo. Good for you.
Good.
Okay.
I'll do what I can, you know?
You do.
Serious topic today.
Yeah, I know. We'll have to think of something funny for the next one.
Okay.
Like maybe your time in that apartment.
The blurry time in that apartment.
Oh, we've got some stories, that's for sure.
Girl.
Maybe people are going to have to pay for that one, though. I don't know.
Oh, I think I would have to pay for them not to listen to that one.
Maybe. All right, honey.
Too funny.
Okay. Well, I guess until next time, this is Bo.
And this is CeeLo.
Thanks for taking a seat at the table today. We love our dinner guests. Don't forget to subscribe and follow The Dinner Agenda on the podcast platform you use so that you don't miss any new episodes. You can also follow us on Instagram and Facebook at The Dinner Agenda.
We look forward to hearing your comments, questions, and even ideas you may have on future episodes.
Thanks for taking this journey with us.